You've just tuned into Beyond Your Past, part of the Mental Health News Radio Network. Welcome back to Beyond Your Past. I'm your host, Matt Pappas, certified life coach specializing in overcoming anxiety and trauma recovery. And this podcast is all about helping you move forward from what holds you back. Each week, you'll hear from coaches, clinicians, and advocates who've overcome tremendous odds and are now using their journey to inspire you throughout yours. This is your place to feel validated and encouraged as you take your life back and live free from your past. Are you ready? Let's do this. Greetings, everyone. Thank you so much for taking some time out of your day to tune into the show, and I hope that this episode inspires and encourages you on your own journey. Special welcome if you're listening to the podcast for the very first time. I hope that you'll enjoy it and perhaps check out some of the past episodes as well. And for those who are regular listeners, you guys rock. You're amazing, and I always appreciate the support so much. A big shout out to my incredible sponsors, INLPCenter.org, offering world-class online neuro-linguistic programming and life coach training to people in over 70 countries. I'm honored to be able to receive my certifications from INLP Center and utilize their research and incredible training programs. And to Daily Recovery Support, interactive daily group calls in a safe atmosphere for survivors of complex trauma, equipping you with the skills and information you can use every single day in your healing journey. Learn more about this affordable resource and get signed up at cptsdfoundation.org. If you find these podcasts helpful, perhaps consider subscribing, leaving a review, and sharing it with your friends. That would be awesome. So my guest today on the podcast is counselor, teacher, and author Lucille Zimmerman. Lucille has a Master of Arts degree in counseling and is a licensed professional counselor working with individuals and groups in the areas of coping with health and midlife issues, eating disorders, struggles related to self-esteem, child abuse, trauma, and marital difficulties. Our chat today centers around post-traumatic growth. Lucille shares her expertise in this area as we talk about what exactly post-traumatic growth is, the reasons why some grow and thrive after trauma while others stay stuck, how ruminating is actually a good thing when it comes to healing, and so much more. I'm honored to be able to share this chat today with you, so let's join the podcast with Lucille Zimmerman as she shares some of her story and the hope that is post-traumatic growth right now. So, hey, Lucille, welcome to Beyond Your Past. How are you doing today?
I'm great. Thanks, Matt, for having me on.
Absolutely. It's my pleasure. I'm excited to hear more about you and your work, and we're going to talk about post-traumatic growth and PTSD and about your book and all kinds of great stuff. So before we jump into that, why don't you take a couple of minutes and share who you are, what you're about, and anything that you would like the listeners to know about you?
Sure. Let's see, I'm a 53-year-old mom and grandma. I have a little 2-year-old, and she's the light of my life. I'm a licensed professional counselor here in Littleton, Colorado. So one of the things I talk about a lot in kind of my own experience is the Columbine High School tragedy that happened, because that was just right down the street from where we live, and many kids were involved in our church. I'm a licensed professional counselor with a private practice, and I've been in practice for about 12 years.
That's awesome. I've got so many questions for you right off the bat. So why don't we start out a little bit, and we're going to talk about trauma and kind of understand what PTSD is, and really just kind of start down that road of explaining it, understanding what post-traumatic growth is, and I'm going to let you take it away.
Okay. Well, so I told you I'm 53. When I was about, well, let me just start with the story behind me and my interest in this. I had a lot of trauma in my past, as have a lot of, that's why people end up going into counseling, is usually to try to understand their story. But, you know, I just kind of assumed, well, everybody has hard stuff that they go through. And I always had this kind of underlying question, like, why do some people end up thriving and why do others stay stuck? So I was a stay-at-home mom. I was raising my kids, and I was a mess. I was just really psychologically a mess because I had never dealt with all these things that had happened in my childhood. I was afraid to go to the mall. I didn't like to drive. If someone was behind me on the freeway, I would move over and let them go. I was just full of anxiety. And then the Columbine tragedy did happen, And I remember having this feeling of like, gosh, what do I do, you know, to help my friends and people who are really suffering. I just remember feeling so badly that I wanted to do more than bring a casserole to someone. And about the same time, someone told me about a brand new counseling program that was starting at a university near my house. And I had always heard that they had had a program before, but then there was like a falling out and then they didn't have one. And I had never considered it, but at that moment, something just leapt in my heart. And I thought, that's what I need to go do. I need to go figure out how to help other people. Not even addressing my own pain and my own suffering, I had kind of squashed that and buried it and, you know, thought, I'll just help other people. What I didn't realize is that a good counseling program is going to cause you to unravel your story and heal, because if you don't heal, you're not going to be any, you know, and I'm sure you know this, you're not going to be effective for other people. And within just a few months, I really did unravel emotionally in the program. And kind of just a little backstory is, people kept telling me, like my professors and supervisors, they'd say, you know what, you need to slow down and you need to do self-care. And I kept thinking, like, what is self-care? I don't know what that is. Fast forward, I ended up spending a couple years writing and researching and having a book published through traditional means. But there was still another book inside me. And that was kind of this idea of, why do people thrive and others stay stuck? And I think it's because I had so many family members. I came from a big family. And I just saw the fallout. I felt like nobody in my family was surviving or thriving. And yet I felt like I got some help and I got some direction. And I really do feel like I was able to use my trauma for good. And so then I spent a few more years really digging into the research to understand, what is this idea of post-traumatic growth? And what is, you know, I already understood what PTSD was, but I wanted to find out, okay, who heals and who grows? And I can talk more about that with you.
Yes, absolutely. And yeah, the post-traumatic growth is something that is not always the most talked about topic. I mean, you know, a lot of us know what PTSD is. Oftentimes, yeah. It's referred mainly to those who are in the military or who have been through some type of natural disaster trauma, but we don't always equate it to those who are trauma survivors.
Right.
You know, be it childhood sexual abuse or narcissistic abuse or, you know, emotional neglect or any of these, all types of areas, you know, including the tragedy at Columbine and other things too. So you mentioned about how you were prompted throughout, or, you know, because of this tragedy, and then went to the counseling program and really decided that you wanted to help others because you had, partly because you had kind of pushed your stuff down and to the side. And that's similar to what I did for so long. I always knew that I enjoyed helping others, but I had no desire, no inkling, didn't really know that I even should consider working on my own stuff, because I just wanted to help other people. And that's kind of where I always, my focus was. So maybe talk a little bit about how that transition was to, as you started to unpack your past, and how that was and how much you realized played into being able to work through the counseling program and get to a point where you can help others after you helped yourself.
Yeah. Well, as I said, the program was very self-reflective. And so every single time, every class, there was a paper and it was like, write your own story. And whether it was trauma or sexual stuff or whatever. And I remember just feeling so angry and irritated that they were making us do this. And one of the comments in one of my papers said, this was a huge affront to you. And just real quickly, some of the traumas I had, which again, I didn't think they were worse than what anyone else had. Big family. I was adopted with a twin sister. I also had two older brothers who were adopted from separate families. And one of those brothers had severe emotional issues. In fact, I think he's schizophrenic. I think he's a sociopath. He spent his life in prison. He became a perpetrator on all the girls in the family. My mom was diagnosed with a terminal illness. And my father was a doctor, and he was trying to take care of a small community. And so there was all this chaos, and nobody knew how to deal with it. Nobody was using any emotional means to talk about it. We all just put the happy face on and kind of crashed through life. I knew that I was terrified of people knowing me. I was terrified of emotional intimacy with people. And yet I was desperate to be connected to people. So you can imagine that dichotomy there. And I would really cope with like drugs, alcohol, and just turn to guys for comfort. But I remember very much being suicidal in college. But the good news is I married someone who was very stable, very kind and very even keeled. And so that was kind of a buffer for me. That was one of the first buffers. And then I found my faith, and that was a second buffer. And then I'd say the last one was, as I said, going into that counseling program and starting to address the things that had happened to me. And I remember dissociation, and I know you've done programs on dissociation, but I remember just kind of spacing out. And I went up to one of my professors after one of my classes, and I said, "This is killing me." And he's like, "Oh, you know, come in and talk." And he really tried to make that available for all the students. You know, he knew that people were going to have issues that came up. And so I would go in and start chatting, and he'd say, "You know, tell me about your life." And I'd say, "Oh, it was perfect. It was good." And I think he just, you know, could see right through that. But eventually he kind of created some safety, and I was able to start acknowledging some things and then eventually move into like to finding my own counselor and really dealing with things. So it was kind of a slow process in the years of my life. You know, a long period of my life had gone by, but then it went very quickly once I was in that program. I felt like someone had just, I say I felt like a turtle where someone had ripped her shell off. And I remember one of my teachers said, "What if you don't need your shell?" And that was this huge aha moment, like, oh, okay, maybe I need to rethink things.
Interestingly enough, many of the people I've talked to, either clients or people who have blogged for my website and whatnot, they mention that, you know, sometimes when they start working, it drags for them. And it's almost like they're going, you know, before they start working on their past, life is humming along, things are good, or at least seemingly okay. And then they start to work on their trauma, and everything just kind of goes to like a, you know, like a snail's pace or a turtle's pace. But for you, and for me and for others, and again, everybody's different, there's no judgment either way. Right. When you get rid of that shell or you start to unpack things, you get all these light bulb moments or these aha moments, as we like to call them. And things start to make sense. And you're like, wow, this is why I do this. And this is why I feel like that. And this is why I, you know, perceive certain things, you know, this way and that way, and why I feel so stuck. And once you get those moments of understanding, it can fuel you and drive you to keep learning more and keep unpacking more. And even though it's not easy, it's extremely difficult, you get motivated by learning. At least that's, you know, it seems that's how you kind of took it. And that's how I did it as well.
Yes. And I think, and I don't know what you think, but for me, it was finding someone who was so safe to talk to. And, you know, research shows that counseling, coaching, that it works. But that the number one key is finding that one person that you feel like you can slowly learn to trust and open up to and begin to tell them things you wouldn't tell your best friend. And so I just look at it as such a lucky incident for me. I didn't mention the first thing that happened in the midst of all this is I had a dog bite. I was out running on the other side of the lake, the far side where there weren't any people. And a woman had two German shepherds off a leash. And one came and bit me in the back of the leg. And I remember just feeling like lightning had hit me. And I was in shock and I was crying so hard I couldn't breathe, you know, that kind of breathing where you're like, you know, that kind. And the lady came along and she was terrified because I think she thought they're going to come take my dogs now. And she looked at me and she said, "You're fine, you're fine." And she grabbed her dogs and took off. And I was hyperventilating and I was, you know, in shock and trying to walk and blood was dripping down my leg. eventually some people stopped and helped me and took me to the ER, and the doctors were like, you know, what? This looks like a bear bite. But what happened is I think that like unleashed all the pain that I had been suffering for so many years. And I felt like I'm no longer going to stay quiet because this is painful. And so that was one of my traumatic events. And what we do with trauma is we usually give ourselves like a statement about ourselves in accordance with the trauma. So what I did with that was I said I deserved that dog bite because I was, I had really like grown to fall in love with this pastor of mine, not a sexual love, but just a, like a good father. And I thought, oh boy, this dog bite happened because I was jogging near his home. Mm-hmm. And so that's how my mind made sense of everything. And that's what trauma survivors do is they overlay their history onto the traumatic event. And so they could say things like, I'm weak, or I deserve that, or, you know, they make I statements about themselves. So it took me a long time to unravel all that.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. And of course, then once you start to overlay all this, all the, you know, like the event that you mentioned, once you start to kind of rationalize that in your mind of, well, I deserve this, your mind is going to run with that and keep giving you information after information and event after event to reinforce what it's already trying to tell you, because it thinks that it's keeping you safe that way. So here you are, you've been bitten by a dog, obviously not your fault, but somehow we as survivors turn it into something that we should or not have been doing. Therefore, this is our punishment. And I can't tell you how many times sitting in a therapist's office in the past or working with a coach and, you know, just thinking, well, I deserved to lose my wife and family because I did this, that, and the other thing, or I deserve to be abused because I didn't tell somebody the first time it happened. So this is what I get. And all these things, you know, again, all different types of trauma. And you just, you keep reinforcing all these negative beliefs and, you know, eventually everything is your fault. You're never good enough and you deserve every bad thing in life. And it takes, it can take such a long time to reverse that. And the good thing is that we can reverse it, but as you mentioned, it takes a lot of work, you know, a lot of hard work, a lot of seeing our past for what it really is, having safe people to reach out to, because so often as survivors, you didn't have anybody safe.
Yeah, that's right. I feel like there's so many things I could address in what you just said. But going back to PTSD, and in my book, I kind of define, I spend a chapter talking about PTSD, post-traumatic stress disorder, which I know you're very familiar with. But then I kind of break off from there and I just start talking about trauma, because in order to have PTSD, you have to have this whole set of criteria. So you have to have the hypervigilance, and then you have to have the whole avoidance piece where you're trying to avoid all the reminders of the trauma. And then you have to have all the re-experiencing symptoms like nightmares and flashbacks and all that. But I kind of explain all that. And then I just basically say, what is trauma? And I love this simple definition that I say, trauma is when you can't make, like when the brain can't make sense of something. And so then suddenly it can open it up to, you know, maybe when you're a child and you're in kindergarten and you wet your pants, that may be like the worst thing that you could have ever imagined happening at age five. And for another person, that might not have been so traumatic. But so basically trauma is different for everyone. It's kind of how your brain makes sense of things. Which I know I'm talking to the choir right here with you. But then, you know, then I move on to this idea of post-traumatic growth. And I'd like to share a story. I don't know if you're familiar with this story. It was called the Zeebrugge disaster, and it was a ferry disaster back in 1987. And this is kind of the beginning of when we started talking about post-traumatic growth. And let me just be clear, you can have PTSD and still have all the pain, all the suffering, and still have post-traumatic growth. So it doesn't negate, you know, one doesn't negate the other one. But have you heard about that ferry accident.
It rings a bell for me. I can't say that I know a whole lot about it because that was in the late 80s when I was still in high school and probably not caring a whole lot about anything.
Me too. I was in college, but it happened in Belgium, and it was this ferry bound for England, and there were 500 passengers aboard plus 80 crew members, so nearly 600 people. And a third ended up dead. Someone just forgot to secure the bow door. And so within 45 seconds, water filled up and it tipped just so quickly. And so here, 193 people died. And so this doctor, Stephen Joseph, from London, he started tracking the survivors for the next, he was doing like a doctorate study on it. And so he was sending out questionnaires and dealing with the survivors to see how they would recover. And one day he thought, all these people keep mentioning some positive things that are happening. And so he just thought he would add one question. And so he added this question: has your life or has your view of life changed since the disaster? And if so, has it changed in a positive way or in a negative way? And he was stunned because nearly half of the people said that their life had actually been launched into a better place. And so I think of it like this, like there's three sets of people, and they, like the first group goes through something horrific. So they go down, down the slide I'm showing with my hands, and then they never get back up to where they were. Then a second group kind of has something horrific happen. And over time and years and working through things, they make their way kind of back to where they were to start with. And then this third group actually has a moment where something changes in their psyche or their psychological view of things, and they use it to launch them. And so now my hand is going way up in the air. It's like they're being spring launched into the air, into a place they never would have been had they not experienced this trauma. So we can think of people like Lance Armstrong, who said that cancer was the best thing that ever happened to him. And it's so hard to talk about this whole idea and not minimize people's pain, because you never want to do that. And as a counselor, I would never want to say, let's think about the bright side of life. I would just never want to do that to someone. And yet half of all people say it's the thing that launched them to a better place. And I'm rambling. I know I'm talking a lot, but Tedeschi and Calhoun are the two guys that are associated with this theory of post-traumatic growth. And they basically have come to the conclusion that people who have PTG, post-traumatic growth, have one or all of these things happen. They have appreciation of life. They have deeper relationships with others. They see new possibility in life. They get new strength. And they also have spiritual changes. And I bet you could say that that's happened to you through some of the hard things you've gone through. You're using it to be a coach and to help other people.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And the thing is, it took me, I would say, I guess relatively speaking, it wasn't that long, but in my mind, it probably seemed a lot longer, was, to get to a point where I could see it as a learning experience, where I could see it as something that was going to propel me forward. And you're right, as one of the things that can be so hurtful for survivors is when somebody says, well, look on the bright side, or, well, look how far you've come since then. And while that may be the case, that yes, I'm still here, and yes, I've made progress, I'm still not glad that it happened. And I think that's the kind of differentiating part we always want to make sure that we talk about is, yes, we are using this to our advantage. We are growing from it. We are making new strides. We are finding about aspects of our life that we never dreamed were even there. And we're using this, to learn from and to better ourselves, but we're still not exactly glad that we were abused or traumatized, or we were involved in some, circumstance that was, so tragic. So, but yes, in my life, I can point to several parts of my healing where, working with a therapist and a coach and doing my writing and even still doing this podcasting now, I still have these moments where, while I'm not glad that I was abused between 5 and 10 and then I was bullied in middle school mm-hmm. and early high school, it's caused me to come to a part of to see myself in a different way, to have a greater understanding of who I am, to use my story to help others, and to really get me to a point of reaching out for help, and then taking that experience of working with a therapist and all of my yeah. healing to the point of being a coach now. So absolutely, when you are involved in a tragedy, when you start to work through and understand it and realize it wasn't your fault, but realize too that, hey, this happened to me. I wish it wouldn't have, but now what can I do to help myself? How can I be a better mm-hmm. person? How can I use this to my advantage? And I think that's such a key part of healing, is how can we use what happened to help ourselves, and, you know, in the process, maybe help others as well.
Yeah. Oh, you're just making me think of so many things. But in my book, I share a story about it's a University of Colorado basketball coach. His name is Tad Boyle. And he had been an okay basketball player through high school and through college. And then this was probably 15, 20 years ago, he was a stockbroker in Boulder, and he was making six figures. He was doing great. And all of a sudden, one day, he was in this horrific T-bone crash. And he had this moment of a wake up where he thought, if I'm going to die, I better get to doing what I want to do. And I want to be a basketball coach. And so he quit his job, making no money. He goes up and starts volunteering in some northeastern state and helping with college basketball people. And then eventually he worked his way all the way up to being a really great coach here at the University of Colorado. And I say in my book, I said, I'm sure he didn't want to get into that horrible car crash. But it made him start thinking. And with post-traumatic growth, growth doesn't occur as a direct result of the traumatic event, but it occurs from the struggle, from trying to psychologically make sense of the new reality. And so one of the best things that I found in looking at this book idea was, we hear people say, oh, you can get bitter, you can get better. Or as a Christian myself, I think, suffering has a purpose. And we all kind of know this. But I wanted to really dig into the research and look at science and say, what does science say, and who grows and who thrives? And it was fascinating to find out who does and who doesn't. And we always need to remember that there's going to be half of all people who are not going to have post-traumatic growth. So we can't push that or force that on people. But I'd like to share one of the most interesting things I found. And that is, do you know what rumination is?
Oh, yes.
Yes.
So, definitely.
So that's, so it's when it's like a cow chewing its cud. It's when mm-hmm. we just start obsessing. Why did he leave me? Why did that happen? And so as counselors, we teach people not to ruminate. That's kind of a standard thing, is we tell people don't ruminate. Well, it turns out that in order to have post-traumatic growth, you actually have to ruminate, but it has to be a certain kind of rumination. So it has to be a positive type. So instead of saying, why me? Why? You say, okay, this happened. Now what am I going to do about it? How can I use this? And that might be a really long process. That might take years. But I thought that was so fascinating, that rumination was an important piece. It just had to be a certain kind of rumination.
Oh, absolutely. And you're right. One of the first things that my therapist taught me years ago was stop overthinking it, stop thinking about it. And, because mm-hmm. I was obsessing about, things that happened and flashbacks and why my flashbacks were happening and these memories and why did I let this happen? It's everything that you think of as a trauma survivor when you're working with a therapist, that I'm sure you and, mm-hmm. you know, that you know about, and your clients and everybody who's listening who's been through therapy. You're overthinking everything, you're overanalyzing everything. And you're right. That was one of the initial strategies that we started working on, was don't overthink it. As you mentioned, it's actually a real, you know, I don't think we always equate it, the healing part that you mentioned, with ruminating, but in a sense, I think you're actually right. It is ruminating, but you're focusing mm-hmm. on a different part of it. And, you know, of course, in order to work through something, you have to first acknowledge it. And then, you know, before you can start to fix it, or, you know, to find alternative ways to view it and to heal. So you first have to acknowledge it. And by doing so, then when you do, when you focus your attention on not necessarily how bad something was or why it happened, but what can I learn from it and how can I use this to my advantage, that promotes all these new pathways in your brain to start, you know, being built. It promotes all this excitement about healing and resilience. That's and right. self-confidence. And yes, absolutely. I don't think I ever equated this part of the healing to actually rumination, but I think you're actually right. It's kind of a unique way to look at it.
Mm-hmm. And so in my book, I have a couple chapters about this kind of like making meaning or giving a purpose to your suffering, which you're doing, and which that's what I do. I could so easily say, why did all these awful things happen? And I actually did, as I was grieving, you know, I had to really address the pain and grieve it. But now I look at it as like, wow, I get to use all of this. And it was necessary. It was part of my, and I'm sure you do the same thing. It was necessary for what you do now. And you also have to make a cognitive decision to heal. And I'm sure you see people who stay stuck. I used to work with groups of sexual abuse survivors. And I would see people who had been there for decades. And they would come and they would surround themselves with candy and tacos and Cokes and kind of buffer themselves with all these things. But they were forever victims. They were never going to come out of it. In a way, it was like there was a payoff for staying stuck. And I know that sounds insensitive. I don't want to be like that. But I also want to hold out this possibility that you can heal and that you can grow. And that you can use all that pain and suffering. Like, it's a tragedy if you waste it, right? If you just waste all your suffering, because it leaves gifts in its wake.
I can't tell you how many times I sat in an office in the past and listened, and you could say kind of listened to myself or had it reflected back to me, how many times I said, I don't want to heal. I know it's all that I know. I'm afraid to heal. I'm afraid to move forward because all I know is mm-hmm. the way I've always been. So for me, the possibility of, for lack of a better term, feeling better or getting better felt foreign. It felt scary. And I'm like, this is just too much work. It's much easier to stay the way I am. I'm comfortable here. It's safe. Now it's maybe not healthy, but it's familiar and it's safe, right? It's what I know. Exactly. And so I resisted too. And then I also, because I had started writing a lot and doing blogging, I was like, okay, well, if I start to feel better, I can't help other people, because then if I'm better, nobody's going to relate to what I have to say because I'm not stuck. I cannot tell you how many times, Lucille, I sat and told my therapist that. And she said, she reflected back to me, you know, in a very compassionate way, that she was more than confident in me and in my blogging and the people that I would reach, and it would be a whole new set of people and all these things that she was encouraging me. But for so long, I just resisted. And I'm like, no, it's not happening. I don't want to heal. I like being stuck, because then I'm inspired to write, or I'm inspired to do this, that, and the other thing. And of course, as I found out, as I continued to heal, I was writing about all different types of things, and I could see a shift in myself and in my writing. But yeah, I absolutely know what you mean about being comfortable, because being stuck is what you know.
Yeah, and you know what, I relate to this so well, what you're saying, and I don't know if you've ever seen this handout. I don't know if it's a kind of a universal handout, but you can picture kind of a V or a U, like this deep valley that people go down into when they experience something awful, you know, or a lifelong period of something awful. And it talks about the grief healing process. So you go down and you have despair and guilt and suffering and sorrow. And then it starts to go across the bottom, and then it starts to go back up. And on the right-hand side, you have starting to feel hopeful and starting to feel encouraged. And it's like the birds start to tweet and there's a rainbow and it starts to get a little better. And then it goes all the way up to the top and you come out good again. But what happened, and I had a therapist show this to me one time. She said, you know, people go down and they start to get better and grow. And then they quickly jump back over to the other side.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
I said, that's right. That's what happens. And I said, how did you learn this? And she said, I've just been a therapist for a really long time. And she said, it makes sense because it's familiar. We don't want to go to the unfamiliar, even if it's good. We want to go to what's familiar. And we keep doing that over and over, start to heal and get better. And then we jump back over to the left and go down again. But each time we come up a little further. And it is a process, right? Of you probably know Dr. Judith Herman and her book about trauma. And she basically says there's three stages. One is safety, just finding safety with your therapist or a pastor or a friend. And then second is re-experiencing all that trauma. And that's the worst part. It's so painful to re-experience it through talking and crying and reading. And then finally, there's this new part that's recreating a new person, or who am I on this side? And that's a really hard part because we've never been there.
You are so right. And there's so many things that I could kind of piggyback on as well. But one of the things I wanted to cover yet today is we've talked about a little bit throughout the podcast of some reasons why people thrive and others stay stuck. So maybe you can kind of outline a handful of each, just so we can all understand some reasons why, you know, those of us who are able to experience post-traumatic growth and why that is, and why so many other ones, as you mentioned, at least half, unfortunately, aren't able to get to a point of growth.
Mm-hmm. And not that I have every reason, but I just want to say it wasn't one thing. There were several things. I'd say one of the most important ones was connection. And there was a period of time where I really believed that in order to be stronger in life, I needed to just separate from people and differentiate and be my own person. But then I eventually came to this conclusion that no, we need connection and we need deep, deep, deep connections with other people. And so trying to find a social support is key. And so I spend a whole chapter talking about, you know, when you have PTSD, you're literally alienated from others and from your own self. And so it's just a terrifying place to be. And I talk about what trauma does that keeps you from being with other people, but knowing that that's one of the key things you need is you really need to connect deeply with a support system. And I talk about who's trustworthy and who isn't, because I think trauma survivors tend to overshare or undershare, but finding just who are those really safe people that I can open up with. Spirituality is highly correlated with post-traumatic growth. Emotional disclosure, so being able to talk, or like you said, write, you know, journal and grieve. And this is such a key thing too, is many of us have spent years writing in our journals or diaries, but I think it's necessary to do that processing with another human, because we get hurt in human relationships. And so we heal with human relationships. So we're not going to heal just sitting at home, just suffering, you know, by ourselves. So emotional disclosure, and then grit is a key piece. And grit is, you know, it's not, I'm trying to think of the good definition of grit. Grit is basically, it's the person who's just long-suffering. You know, it's not like they're any smarter than anybody else. It's that they're willing to continue, like me, writing a book. It's hard. It's so hard to figure out, how do you get an agent? And how do you, you know, go through the editing process? But it's the person who doesn't give up. And most people give up before they get to the end goal. And so it's that having that grit. It's cognitive strategies, and I have a whole bunch of cognitive strategies, such as your self-talk. You talked a little bit about the lens that you see things through. So I call those my manure manure glasses. So you can either pick up a pair of glasses and look through the world and just see everything like manure, or you can pick on a brighter pair, rose-colored ones, and see the better side. And I talk about self-compassion. And for a lot of us, I don't know if you know this, but with PTSD, people can go through something horrific. Say there's four people that experience the same horrific event. Three of those people are going to be okay, and one is going to get PTSD. And I really want to know who's that one person. And it has to do with if you had a lot of trauma in your early life, you're a lot more susceptible, you're ripe to get PTSD. Poverty is another factor. They've done research that shows people that lived in Spanish Harlem had much more PTSD after 9/11 than other neighborhoods. And it was because when you have poverty, you're just likely to have much more trauma, you know, maybe drinking and violence or whatever. So it's fascinating for me to study who does get PTSD and who doesn't. Just, you know, like when I wanted to understand who grows and who doesn't. So part of it's just your physiology, you know, you're born with certain kind of wiring. It's also connected to your support system. And I mean, there's so many things, but it was fun to really do the research and find out what helps people.
Oh, it is. I find it fascinating as well, just to do research on, you know, not only things that I went through, but just PTSD in general and how complex PTSD fits into this and the factors of your upbringing and, you know, not only in the past, but the way that your life is now and including your household and your work and your social circles, everything. We could go on and on, and I would love to bring you back and dive into some of these more specifically, you know, parts of your book and whatnot, but this has been amazing, and the time has absolutely just flown by. It's already, and I'm like, wow, like, where did the time go? Because once you get rolling on this kind of stuff, you just, like, get engulfed in it, so.
Yeah. So I guess what I just want to leave your listeners with is just this idea that growth can happen. It doesn't happen to everyone. And it doesn't negate all the pain and suffering, and that the two can be together side by side. In fact, you need a certain level of awfulness to experience growth. So if it's just kind of a minor awful thing, you're probably not going to have that huge moment of growth. So I guess those are my points.
I love it. That's amazing. Everything you said is just so incredible. And thank you so much for coming on the show, for explaining some about your book and everything that you've been through and learning more about post-traumatic growth and all the examples and all of the factors that go into it. And again, I would love to bring you back in the future, but for now we can wrap it up. You can share where people can find you on the web, your book, if they're interested in working with you and all that good stuff.
Great. Do you want me to just mention my website right now?
Sure. Fire away.
Or it's LucilleZimmerman.com. So it's LucilleZimmerman.com. And the book is called Finding the Upside of Down.
Excellent. And I will be sure and put the links to your book, the links to your website in the show notes so everybody can check it out. Thanks again, Lucille, for coming on Beyond Your Past. It's been amazing, and I cannot wait to do it again.
Thank you, Matt. I really appreciate the time.
Thanks for listening to Beyond Your Past, part of the Mental Health News Radio Network. Information shared on this podcast is intended for educational and informational purposes only and is not a substitute for or supersedes professional medical help or mental health counseling. Thank you again to my sponsors, INLPCenter.org and Daily Recovery Support. I hope you'll consider checking them out as they've joined forces to help keep the lights on here at the podcast and help Beyond Your Past reach as many as possible with a message of hope. If you'd like to learn more about working with me as your coach, or if you're curious about what life coaching is and how it might be right for you, then head on over to beyondyourpast.com and claim your free one-hour session, where we can talk about the struggles in your life in the areas of anxiety and trauma recovery and see if coaching might be a great fit for you. Thanks again for listening, and I do hope that you'll subscribe to the podcast, leave a review, and share it with all your friends. See you next time.